We are starting chapter 4 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called Horace Slughorn. Despite the fact that he spent every waking moment of the past few days hoping desperately Dumbledore would indeed come to fetch him, Harry felt distinctly awkward as they set off down Privet Drive together. He had never had a proper conversation with the headmaster outside of Hogwarts before. There was usually a desk between them. The memory of their last face-to-face encounter kept intruding, too, and it rather heightened Harry's sense of embarrassment. He had shouted a lot on that occasion, not to mention done his best to smash several of Dumbledore's most prized possessions. Dumbledore, however, seemed completely relaxed. "Keep your wand at the ready, Harry," he said brightly. "But I thought I'm not allowed to use magic outside of school, sir." "If there's an attack," said Dumbledore, "I give you permission to use any counter jinx or curse that might occur to you. However, I do not think you need to worry about being attacked tonight." "Why not, sir?" "You are with me," said Dumbledore simply. "This will do, Harry." He came to an abrupt halt at the end of Privet Drive. "You have not, of course, passed your apparition test," he said. "No," said Harry. "I thought you had to be 17. "You do," said Dumbledore, "so you will need to hold onto my arm very tightly. My left, if you don't mind, as you have noticed, my wand arm is a little fragile at the moment." Harry gripped Dumbledore's proffered forearm. "Very good," said Dumbledore. "Well, here we go." Harry felt Dumbledore's arm twist away and redoubled his grip. The next thing he knew, everything went black. He was being pressed very hard from all directions. He could not breathe. There were iron bands tightening around his chest. His eyeballs were being forced back into his head. His eardrums were being pushed deeper into his skull, and then he gulped great lungfuls of cold night air as he opened his streaming eyes. He felt as though he had been forced through a very tight rubber tube. It was a few seconds before he realized that Privet Drive had vanished. He and Dumbledore were standing now in what appeared to be a deserted village square, in the center of which stood an old war memorial and a few benches. His comprehension catching up with his senses, Harry realized he had just apparated for the first time in his life. "Are you all right?" said Dumbledore, looking down at him solicitously. "The sensation does take some time to getting used to." "I'm fine," said Harry, rubbing his ears, which felt as though they had left Privet Drive rather reluctantly. "But I think I might prefer brooms." Dumbledore smiled, drew his traveling cloak a little more tightly around his neck, and said, "This way." He set off at a brisk pace past an empty inn and a few houses. According to a clock on a nearby church, it was almost midnight. "So tell me, Harry," said Dumbledore, "your scar, has it been hurting at all?" Harry raised a hand unconsciously to his forehead and rubbed the lightning-shaped mark. "No," he said, "I've been wondering about that. I thought it would be getting burning. It would be burning all the time now that Voldemort's getting so powerful." He glanced up at Dumbledore and saw that he was wearing a satisfied expression. "I, on the other hand, thought otherwise," said Dumbledore. "Lord Voldemort has finally realized that dangerous access to his thoughts and feelings you've been enjoying. It appears that he is now employing occlumency against you." "Well, I'm not complaining," said Harry, who missed neither the disturbing dreams nor the startling flashes of insight into Voldemort's mind. I think we'll stop there. Never mind, I think we'll continue. They turned a corner, passing a telephone box and a bus shelter. Harry looked sideways at Dumbledore again. "Professor?" "Harry?" "Where exactly are we?" "This, Harry, is the charming village of Budleigh Babberton." "And what are we doing here?" "Ah, yes, of course, I haven't told you," said Dumbledore. "Well, I have lost count of the number of times I've said this in recent years, but we are once again one member of staff short. We are here to persuade an old colleague of mine to come out of retirement and return to Hogwarts." "How can I help with that, sir?" "Oh, I think we'll find a use for you," said Dumbledore vaguely. "Left here, Harry." They proceeded up a steep, narrow street lined with houses. All the windows were dark. The odd chill that had lain over Privet Drive for 2 weeks persisted here, too. thinking of Dementors. Harry cast a look over his shoulder and grasped his wand reassuringly in his pocket. Professor, why couldn't we just apparate directly into your old colleague's house? Because it would be quite as rude as kicking down the front door, said Dumbledore. Courtesy dictates that we offer fellow wizards an opportunity to deny us entry. In any case, most wizarding dwellings are magically protected from unwanted apparators. At Hogwarts, for instance, you can't apparate anywhere inside the buildings or grounds, said Harry quickly. Hermione Granger told me. And she's quite right. We turn left again. The church clock chimed midnight behind them. Harry wondered why Dumbledore did not consider it rude to call on an old colleague so late. But now that conversation had been established, he had more pressing questions to ask. Sir, I saw in the Daily Prophet that Fudge had been sacked. Correct, said Dumbledore, now turning up a steep side street. He has been replaced, as I am sure you also saw, by Rufus Scrimgeour, who used to be head of the Oral Office. Is he... Do you think he's good? An interesting question, said Dumbledore. He is able, certainly. More decisive and forceful personality than Cornelius. But I meant... I know what you meant. Rufus is a man of action, and having fought dark wizards for most of his working life, does not underestimate Lord Voldemort. Harry waited, but Dumbledore did not say anything again about the disagreement with Scrimgeour that the Daily Prophet had reported, and he did not have the nerve to pursue the subject, so he changed it. And, sir, I saw about Madame Bones. Yes, said Dumbledore quietly. A terrible loss. She was a great witch, just up here, I think. Ouch. He pointed with an injured hand. Professor, what happened to you? I have no time to explain now, said Dumbledore. It is a thrilling tale. I wish to do it justice. He smiled at Harry, who understood that he was not being snubbed, and that he had permission to keep asking questions. Sir, I got a Ministry of Magic leaflet by Owl about security measures we should take against Death Eaters. Yes, I received one myself, said Dumbledore, still smiling. Did you find it useful? No, not really. No, I thought not. You have not asked me, for instance, what my favorite flavor of jam is, to check I am indeed Professor Dumbledore, not an imposter. I didn't, Harry began, not entirely sure whether he was being reprimanded or not. For future reference, Harry, it is raspberry. Although, of course, if I were a Death Eater, I would sure to have been to research my own jam preferences before impersonating myself. Right, said Harry. Well, on that leaflet, it said something about Inferi. What exactly are they? The leaflet wasn't very clear. They are corpses, said Dumbledore calmly. Dead bodies that have been bewitched to do a dark wizard's bidding. Inferi have not been seen for a long time, however, not since Voldemort was last powerful. He killed enough to be able to make an army of them, of course. This is the place, Harry, just here. They were nearing a small, neat stone house, set in its own garden. Harry was too busy digesting the horrible idea of Inferi to have much attention for anything else. But as they reached the front gate, Dumbledore stopped dead and Harry walked into him. Oh dear, oh dear, dear, dear. Harry followed his gaze up carefully tended path and felt his heart sink. The front door was hanging off its hinges. Dumbledore glanced up and down the street. It seemed quite deserted. Wand out and follow me, said Harry, he said quietly. He opened the gate and walked swiftly and silently up the garden path. Harry at his heels, and then pushed the front door very slowly and raised his wand at the ready. Lumos. Dumbledore's wand tip ignited, casting its light up the narrow hallway. To the left, another door stood open. Holding his illuminated wand aloft, Dumbledore walked into the sitting room with Harry right behind him. A scene of total devastation met their eyes. A grandfather clock lay splintered at their feet, its face cracked, its pendulum lying a little farther away, like a dropped sword. A piano was on its side, its keys strewn across the floor. The wreckage of a fallen chandelier glittered nearby. Cushions lay deflated, feathers oozing from slashes in their sides. Fragments of glass and china lay like powder over everything. Dumbledore raised his wand even higher so its light was thrown upon the walls, where something darkly red and glutinous was splattered over the wallpaper. Harry's small intake of breath made Dumbledore look around. "Not pretty, is it?" he said heavily. "Yes, something horrible has happened here." Dumbledore moved carefully into the wreckage of the room, scrutinizing the wreckage. Sorry, into the middle of the room, scrutinizing the wreckage at his feet. Harry followed, gazing around, half scared, what he might see hidden behind the wreck of the piano over the overturned sofa. But there was no sign of a body. "Maybe there was a fight and they dragged him off, Professor?" Harry suggested, trying not to imagine how badly wounded a man would have to be to leave those stains spattered halfway up the walls. "I don't think so," said Dumbledore, quietly peering behind an overstuffed armchair on its side. "You mean he's still here somewhere?" "Yes." And without warning, Dumbledore swooped, plunging the tip of his wand into the seat of the overstuffed armchair, which yelled, "Ouch!" "Good evening, Horace," said Dumbledore, straightening up again. Harry's jaw dropped, where a split second before there had been an armchair that now crouched an enormously fat, bald old man, who was massaging his lower belly and squinting up at Dumbledore with an aggrieved and watery eye. "There is no need to stick the wand in that hard," he said gruffly, clambering to his feet. "It hurt." And I think we'll stop there. And I hope you like that baby kitten. And now you take a little kitten nap. Sleep all the time.